Hello and welcome back to Let the Stone Speak. I'm Brent Nuchtigal, the host of the program. Today we're going to be talking about a recent discovery that was made at Tel Azaka. This is overlooking the Ela Valley, right there where David fought Goliath. It's about halfway between Jerusalem and the Philistine coast, Ashkelon. And this is a site that reaches unto heaven, as it says in some ancient inscriptions about it. It's really famous during the time of Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah. But this discovery that was released to the public just recently has to do with the time period around Nehemiah. So we're talking around the mid-5th century BCE. We're going to be talking about the discovery of a 2,500-year-old mass grave of infants. It's a bit of a distressing topic in some ways. However, I thought that we'd go through it, go through the scientific paper on the discovery, look how it could relate to the Bible, and look at some of what the archaeologists are saying about this discovery. If you're new to our program, don't forget to like and subscribe to our channel. You can also request our magazine. I've just got the copy was delivered to me about 10 minutes ago. This is straight from the press. This is the latest edition. It's the Exodus Through Egypt's Eyes. That's the lead article about the Ipiwer Papyrus. This is from March, April, 2026. We put out this magazine, Let the Stone Speak. It's 40 pages long, full color, available for free. We only ask that you resubscribe every year to make sure we're not sending it to addresses that no longer value the magazine. And if you want this, just go to our website, armstronginstitute.org, and you'll scroll down and find a place where you can request the magazine. Or you can write an email to letters@armstronginstitute.org. Simply put your name and address, and we'll sign you up for our magazine, Let the Stone Speak. It's very similar to what we cover on this podcast. This podcast is mainly interviews with the scholars themselves, and then sometimes I will comment on news reports about archaeological discoveries and or go through scientific papers, as I'm going to go with you today. So I'm going to use an article that appeared in Haaretz, their archaeological writer, one of them, Ariel David. He's quite a good archaeological writer, been doing it for some time. So he's probably got a breadth of knowledge of archaeology, perhaps greater than some archaeologists, I would say, of writing on these subjects for the past probably decade. This article came out March 28th, 2026, so it's fairly recent. The paper itself was published March 27th, 2026, so a day after Ariel David with this article. I'm just going to quote the first few paragraphs. You get an idea of the content, and then we're going to go straight to the scientific report and see what they say, and then we're going to make a comparison where it's possible with the Bible. More than a decade ago, archaeologists investigating a cistern, so this is a place for water storage inside the ground, among the ruins of Azaka, an ancient town southwest of Jerusalem, made a gruesome discovery. The millennial-old water reservoir was not only filled with broken pottery and sediment, washed in during centuries of abandonment, as one would expect, it also contained dozens of skeletons of children. The mass grave for infants, most of them less than 2 years old, was likely in use during the Persian period, some 2,500 years ago. It housed the fragile, jumbled remains of up to 89 individuals, the researchers say. So this period, again, we're talking about after Israel went into captivity, Judah went into captivity, after 70 years or a bit under that, you have the return of Zerubbabel. Around 538, 537 BCE, and then you have the return of Ezra around 458, 457 BC, about 80 years later, and then Nehemiah comes along 445, 444 for his first stint as the governor of the new province of Yehud, which would exist underneath the auspices of the Persian Empire inside the satrapy beyond the river. So this is, in terms of biblical history, post-exilic period or Persian period, we're talking about the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, as we'll get to. And this is when this grave was in use, they believe, or this burial was in use. The unique and unsettling find helps us explain an enduring archaeological mystery about the absence of young children in burials from this period, and also sheds light on the beliefs and social norms of the ancient Israelites, they say. So this is according to the paper. While analysis is still going on, the remains don't appear to belong to victims of a massacre or plague, a team of Israeli and German researchers reported Friday in the Palestine Exploration Quarterly, which we'll go through. They suspect the cistern was used over decades to try to bury children who died of natural causes in an era when the infant mortality rates were very high. So it is unusual. It's the first burial of this type for children. There are a few possibly non-children that were in this as well. From this period, Persian period, all through the land of Israel. And so it's definitely worthwhile to ask the question, what were they doing here? Why aren't they in a typical burial, if we can call that, if we have such a thing? We'll go to the scientific report. It says a mass grave of young children and infants from the Persian period in Tal Azaka and its importance for the understanding of burial practices of unweaned infants by Oded Lifshitz et L. You see the rest of the authors here. Now, this is a great paper. It's free. You can go and download this and read it yourself. I'll put it in the show notes of today's program so you can go through it. I'm going to quote it so you can kind of see how these archaeological reports go forward. You've got the summary, general idea of what they've found, what they believe it means. And then you have the history of research at the site, how long the site's been excavated, what periods were discovered. And then we'll get down into the nitty-gritty about the archaeological context for the burial itself. So archaeology is all about dating. How do we arrive at the dating? We use material remains that are different in different ages, different times. You could be using coins. At this, there wasn't many coins found in this, or any coins found in this cistern, which is very rare, let's say, if this was a cistern from a later period. Coinage isn't really in use that often during the Persian period. It hasn't become into vogue here in the land of Israel. And so that's another way of pointing to the earlier dating of this cistern is the lack of coins. They've also used pottery. This is the main tool for dating from this period. Different pottery types that come in and out of style over time. And then new styles develop. And then if you can create a chronology based on those styles, you can fix a date or a date range attached to pottery vessels. And then when you find those pottery vessels, you would date the area or the context, the locus, we could call it, based on the latest the latest date of that pottery that's in existence there. So the archaeological context, this is from page 5. It says this: in the late Babylonian, early Persian period, Azaka was reoccupied with the erection of several architectural units along its northern, southern, and western fringes, including the Upper Tell. Occupation at the site was quite extensive compared to other settlements in the region during that time. Tal Azaka seems to have been densely settled, including large structures with central courtyards found in these areas, as it goes on to write. Skipping down, it says, the cistern was excavated in Area S2, located on the southwest lower plateau of the mound, was probably carved during the Middle Bronze Age. So cisterns carved really early into bedrock to hold water. Middle Bronze Age, we're going around 2000 BCE all the way around to 1500 BCE. It has a rough bell shape and a diameter of 1.75 meters at its lowest point. It has two opening shafts and it's coated with multiple layers of plaster, indicating replastering, that it's in continual use or use. And then they'll come back, clean out the settlement, replaster it to make sure it holds the water. So that's happened a few times. It was used throughout the Bronze and Iron Ages, so all the way through the biblical period, and ceased to be used as a water cistern during the Iron IIc, as indicated by the accumulation of restorable vessels at its bottom. A 10-centimeter layer of white chalk accumulated in the cistern, sealing the Iron 2C remains. So this is the final remains that are leading up to the destruction of Tel Azaka by Nebuchadnezzar's army during the time of Jeremiah. That's when this ceased to function as a cistern. That's just the Iron 2C dating there. In its final phases, the cistern was used as a burial place during the Persian period. And then it gives the locus, which is just the context of this layer of Persian, Babylonian, Persian period material. And the southern entrance was sealed with a flat semi-worked stone, leaving the northern entrance as the only opening. Within an accumulation of approximately 1 meter, the remains of a minimum of 68 individuals, primarily children and infants, were identified, discovered alongside the pottery and stone objects and jewelry. So they excavated this in two stages, 2012 and 2013. And Oded Lifshitz, he was interviewed by Ariel David, who's the lead excavator here, and he said it was, I mean, the reason it took a decade is when you find something like this, it does take a while to start to process it. You've got a lot of other things to study, and it's a kind of a bit of a gruesome thought and task to think about all these individuals, young babies, infants, children, young children that were interned, which were put into this cistern. And so it took him a while to get to the publication of it. So as far as the datable material, well, it goes on to say that this was not they don't believe it's a burial, a secondary burial where you have a bunch of graves or people die somewhere else and then you're going to intern them here after, throw them all in after. It looks like this was a primary burial. They go through the ceramic assemblage, typical of the point of this section of the paper is to establish the dating of the site. It goes through the profiles or the cross sections of the pottery vessels, and the pottery vessels profiles or the shape is what changes mostly. And so they publish them not because they're excited about all the pottery vessels that they find, but because the pottery vessels themselves are what they're using for dating, to be able to date this layer. And so they're presenting their evidence of the dating by showing the pottery styles that were found within this meter in association with all these dead or the remains of these youth or these young people. It is interesting. They've got on the next page, it goes through some of the small finds that they discovered as well. They do have this last little seal impression, or this seal that they discovered in there. It looks like it's blue, perhaps made of faience. It says the third is a rectangular scaraboid similar to an object that was found in the City of David and dated to the 25th, 26th dynasties, found in a 6th century context in the City of David. That's kind of cool because we were excavating underneath a tower that Dr. Elot Mazar dated to Nehemiah's time in the City of David. I was just 21 at the time. And we were able to date the structure above to Nehemiah's time. And then underneath, we came upon a layer dating to the Babylonian period. And in this transition, Babylonian period, I mean this interlude between post-destruction Jerusalem, 586, and pre-Persian coming, 537, 536, you got about 50 years where we're calling the Babylonian period. This period where there was some habitation in the land of Judah and governed by the Babylonians. There is, Jeremiah is still around for a few years at the time. Headquarters goes to Mizpah and then they run down to Egypt and so on. There's parts of the book of Jeremiah that take place at this time. That's the Babylonian period. However, underneath Nehemiah's tower in the City of David, we discovered a very similar seal to the one that they discovered here, and the period matches. Babylonian period into the 5th century as well is the date that we gave it when we were excavating. Let's talk about the skeletal remains themselves now, and then we're going to start connecting this to the biblical text if it's possible. It says a total of 722 long bones were counted, with the femur and the humerus being the most common skeletal remains, approximately 40%. The number of individuals was estimated to be between 68 and 89, depending on the method applied. continuing down. Accordingly, most individuals were under 5 years old, around 90%, with 70% under 2 years old, 2 years. Specifically, the rate of individuals under 2 years was approximately 71% according to the humerus and 74% according to the femur, so the different size of these. Notably, although age could not have been estimated for 102 elements remains, morphologically they corresponded to those of young children, supporting our results. Only a few individuals between 2 and 8, depending on the skeletal element examined, were identified as adolescents or adults. So basically the bone structure of a human being doesn't really change until puberty. And so you can't really tell the gender of the individual based on the bones prior to puberty. You'd have to use DNA or something like that to figure out whether they're boys and girls. They haven't done that yet, but they can tell from some of the bones that not everyone was a youth, although most of them were. And then it gets into the discussion, something that I think is obviously the most important part of this, or at least say, what does it mean if you're finding a cistern full of these bones of mostly young people? And this is what they attempt to answer. It says this: the mass grave uncovered at Tel Azaka may reflect a broader and more common way of burying young children and infants. Although additional cases have not been found so far in the geographical area of Judah and its surroundings, in other parts of the Eastern Mediterranean, it seems to have been more frequent than it is commonly thought today. On the island of Astypalaia, I do not know how to pronounce that, part of the Dodecanes group in Greece, I did look it up on Google Earth, and I would like to visit there in the future. Nice tiny islands, probably 5 miles across, something like that, maybe a little bit more. A rescue excavation uncovered a cemetery containing the remains of 2,400 infants, mostly perinatal, but some up to the age of 2, with no adults present. And the great majority of the burials were dated to the 6th and 5th century BCEs. So this is, one more sentence. The pits, the deceased were buried in large pots, laid on their sides in pits cut into the hard bedrock. Very little evidence of grave goods was found. So it's giving a similar time period as this cistern in Azaka. And it's saying that they have a mass burial of young people, but you can't, of children, but you can't, very young, but you can't really find anything else in the land of Israel, even going back into the Iron Age proper, or the Iron II period, the period that we would call the biblical monarchies of Israel and Judah. So what is happening here? Let's go down to their conclusions. The mass grave of infants and young children at Tel Azaka, a possible explanation. It says here, the fact that the burials within the cisterns are almost exclusively of young children and infants raises many questions about how children were viewed and treated in Judah during this time. Although we cannot rule it out as a possibility, they say that it's probably not from disease. The place is not associated with a temple or anything like that, so there's no ritual sacrifice going on here at all. It is thus suggested that the cistern served as a mass grave for young children and infants who died very young, before they were weaned from breastfeeding. Due to their young age, they were not given separate burials and were buried in a single place. For the approximately 10% of individuals older than 5 years, this burial may have served as a secondary internment in the absence of other options, or these individuals may have been of lower social status or foreigners. So this is kind of getting to the point that they've discussed what they've found. What does it mean? This is their best guess. They're all young. We don't really find many burials. We don't really have parallels of this. We're assuming that these are around the weaning age. And perhaps they're going to say in their paper that these human beings, when they're young at this period, they don't warrant a individual burial or a burial within the household, but they're just going to be all buried together. And then following on this, they talk about weaning as a rite of passage. They talk about Samuel being weaned, and from that point, he can go to the tabernacle in Shiloh, and so on. And so it's interesting that they're attaching this weaning period to the bones in that are found there. And indeed, this could be the case. It could be. Now, there's a couple of questions then that would arise. Is this, so who is doing this, for one? Is it the Jews that have returned to the land of Israel under Nehemiah's time? Is it another ethnicity? What are their social customs like? Is it something, can the Bible have, is it the Bible instructive in explaining what they've discovered or not? They're using the biblical example of the weaning process and how it's mentioned in the story of Hannah and Samuel at Shiloh, and they're going to apply it to this case. Just the conclusion now, and then we'll kind of pick it apart a little bit. In light of the above analysis and our interpretation of the findings from the mass grave uncovered at Tel Azaka, we propose that the cistern was used during the early Persian period mainly for burying infants and young children who had not yet been weaned from breastfeeding. The finding indicates that before this crucial stage in life, a human seems not to have yet achieved an independent existence, earning the honor of a separate vessel. In our opinion, this was an accepted way during this period, Persian period, and perhaps also during the Iron Age. We're going back to monarchy, when they control this whole territory, to bury young children and infants who were still breastfeeding, many of whom did not survive this early stage of life. This topic has hardly been studied from either archaeological or biblical perspectives. The discovery of the mass burial at Tel Azaka and the analysis of the remains may allow archaeologists, biblical scholars, and historians to expand the limited understanding of infant and young children burial practice in the province of Judah during the Persian period. This may also shed light on this subject during broader periods and regions. So they're taking what they've found here in Azaka from the Persian period and perhaps applying it to the monarchy period, the Iron Age in Judah, about how apparently little children, while they're unweaned, they've not yet reached independent existence and the honor of having a separate burial, so they're all thrown into a burial cistern by themselves. Very interesting. It just, to me, it just doesn't smell right. Now, that's a bias, and I'll admit that. That's my bias. That it doesn't smell right just because they're not old enough, they're not going to get a certain burial. If it is indeed sanctioned, or at least this is how it was done in ancient Israel. There's a couple of points to think about. I don't disagree with the dating. That looks really sound. Or even the presence of all these young people. There's something happened here. A couple of questions, though, is whether it would relate to Judahite control or control of the Jews in this territory. Indeed, the Azaka itself, the site, is mentioned in the Bible as being under the control of the, or inside the province or the small little district of Yehud, Judah, during the time of Nehemiah and a little bit thereafter. It's mentioned in Nehemiah chapter 11, and it's talking about who lives in the area. And then it says, this is verse 30. It's going through this area of the Shephelah, the lowlands. It says, Zanoah, Adullam, and their villages, Lachish, and the fields thereof, Azaka, and the towns thereof. So they encamped from Beersheba unto the valley of Hinnom. This is talking about the tribe of Judah. This is where they lived. And so they did indeed go back there and establish themselves in this location. Nehemiah. He has two stints as governor. The first stint is 12 years. Then he returns back to Persia with Artaxerxes, and then he comes back at some point. And when he returns back in chapter 13, he finds out that the people themselves aren't really obeying everything that they should, and he's trying to correct them for a lot of things. And what's interesting is when you get down to the middle part of the chapter, it talks about how their children were being raised and they were learning the language of the Ashdodites. They were learning this language that wasn't Hebrew, and he was furious about this. There indicates that there is, even at this time period, a incursion into the, as it always happens, into the social customs of the Jews that were back there, the customs of the nearby populations. And this is in the Persian period, the same time period this happened. So I'm just thinking when they've found all of these bodies inside here, we have to think, is this something that was desirable, or is it something that foreigners did and that the Jews themselves were starting to do? Not sure. So there's a question in my mind as to whether this was a sanctioned activity. The other question that comes up is whether it's in fact true that there haven't been young children that have been found in contexts of burials alongside adults in Judah during the Iron Age, a little bit before this period. Because they claim here that this could be help us understand why we don't really find many children in graves throughout Israel from other periods as well. And I just want to quote from another article now. This is The Death of Children in Ancient Israel by Christine Garraway, professor of Bible, Hebrew Union College. This is from Bible and Interpretation, and this was published October 2025. And this does a really good job at studying Iron Age burial practices for children in the land of Judah. And notice what it writes here. It's happily, there are some reports where we see that they either were looking for children or at least careful enough to list all the remains they found, speaking of these archaeologists from previous times. In a study of Iron Age II Judah sites, so Iron Age II, 10th century, all the way through till the destruction of Azekah, I found 9 sites with some meaningful skeletal remains, by which I mean remains that received more than a passing reference to scattered skeletal remains in the reports. Because the pattern of remains was so similar between the sites, they can be understood as representative of how we might think about the way Judahites buried their dead. In most cases, so this is talking about Judahite biblical period, this is how they're burying the dead. The reason I'm doing this is because if you just read the paper, you might think, based on what they found at Azekah, at the very edge of Jewish-controlled Yehud from the Persian period, that they were throwing all these young people up to, 5 years old, up to 2, 5, inside a mass grave, and they have applied that, saying that it could have been the way that it was elsewhere. And that is not something that the archaeological remains of burials from Judah, even from the 10th century, from the probably mostly from the 7th and 6th century BCE. That is not the way, not what the prior evidence says. So you can't really apply. And it's couched in maybe and if, but it sows the seed to say that these young unweaned children, they didn't have a burial like the adults. Now it is a fact that child mortality was quite high at this point. There's been estimates up to 50% didn't survive their first year, and of that 50% that didn't survive up to 15. So there is going to be a lot of child mortality, young infants dying. She says this: in most cases, Judahite bench tombs with skeletal remains do indeed include infants and children as well as adults, supporting the conclusion that the family tomb is an apt description. She talks about these, what we know as a family or bench tomb that they find in Judah. Numerous sites have these. It's a room in bedrock mostly, and it's got benches either side, so they call it a bench tomb. And inside these that she's found, with 9 different sites with meaningful skeletal remains, you do find children inside this family tomb. She writes, for example, the tomb complex at Tel Iton, while relatively large, did not preserve many individuals. 5 females, 1 male, and 1 immature individual was inside there. It seems, and then she continues, It seems unlikely that a child or infant would be buried in a tomb alongside the people they were totally unrelated to, so it's probably a child from the family itself. Then she writes, when compared to the way that infants and children are buried outside of Judah, the use of family tombs is noticeable. Outside of Judah, infants and children are buried using methods that are different from the adults of their communities. She goes through several examples that you have children that are buried differently to the adults. And this is what we see a case of. We're on the edge of Judah at the time, in the Persian period, a little bit after this, and the young people are being buried differently to the adults. And she says, in Judah, it's not like this. In Judah, from the examples we have from the time period of the biblical kings of Judah, we have family tombs. She writes, consider also the coastal sites. So sites that are going on closer to Azeka and further out, whose cemeteries include a variety of burial sites, styles, caves, pits, cists, jars, and stone-lined graves. In general, individuals in a given coastal cemetery are buried in a uniform manner. However, when we see a mix of burial styles, it is almost always a child or infant that is the outlier. Children are a little bit different. But not in Judah, not during the Iron Age too. She writes, the preference for and prevalence of burials with adults, infants, and children placed together in rock-cut family bench tombs is unique to Judah during the Iron Age too. Of course, these lovely rock-cut tombs are likely the final resting place of the people with means, and so on. So it's just interesting. And the reason I just wanted to cover this even today is to push back at the notion that could be implied by the study to show that these young children, Judahite society during the period of the monarchy, were not, if they died, unfortunately, were not interned inside of a tomb with the family. It indeed does look like they were. Just one more example here to show the point. It says of this, based on this analysis, the intentional mixing of infants, children, and adults and grave goods takes on special meaning. The living members of a society actively chose not only to include their infants and children in bench tombs, but also to collect their remains and intermingle them with the adults and the adult grave goods. To this point, consider the repository pit at Ketef Hinnom. So this is overlooking the Hinnom Valley, where the Silver Scrolls were discovered, just outside the old city walls, inside what you'd call West Jerusalem today. There was a repository there where over 95 individuals of all ages were found along over 1,000 objects. Rather than excluding infants and children or placing them in a slightly different area, communities like those burying at Ketef Hinnom fully incorporated them into the household of the dead. So when referring to the death of young children in Judah, we do during the biblical period. The biblical period, I mean the period of the monarchy, the Iron II period. We do find them, not as outliers, by off by themselves, inside the family tomb. What they've found in Azeka, 100 years later or so, is a massive or a cistern full of a lot of young children. So perhaps this is Jewish young children during the reign or time of Nehemiah that where this happened. Perhaps this was already the Ashdodites or the Phoenician-governed people or somebody else that were putting their social norms onto the Jews that were there, but to apply what they found there in Azeka to children's burials inside, I would say, Persian period Yehud proper, Jerusalem and elsewhere, or even taking it back to the Iron Age during the biblical period, the period of the biblical kings of Judah, it's a bit of a stretch. That's all we're going to cover for today's program. If you like the content, don't forget to like and subscribe to our channel and also request our magazine, Let the Stone Speak. Simply go to our website, armstronginstitute.org, to order. Scroll down, you'll find a place where you can receive your free yearly subscription. If you would like to send feedback or request the magazine via email, you can write to letters@armstronginstitute.org. All the articles I've covered today will be in the show notes of today's program. Have a good day.